The Sunstone Foundation presents Visions of the Perfect Sacrament Meeting, recorded live at the 1989 Sunstone Symposium held August 23rd through 26th in Salt Lake City, Utah. We take you now to the University of Utah campus where the program is about to begin.
So my name is Marty Esplin. I'm with Sunstone, the associate editor there. Susan Howe is she has her PhD in English and creative writing, and she's teaching at the University of at BYU. And Ross Peterson is co-editor of Dialogue and is a professor of what?
History
at Utah State. And Jeff Johnson is a Utah State archivist. And I chose these people because they are friends of mine, and I knew they would do it. It's nice to be able to call on people that you can count on. I'm interested that there are so many of us here because maybe there are a lot of us that go to sleep on our own sacrament meetings. There are things that I like about the block system in the church now, but I mostly do not like it. I prefer a sacrament meeting held separately so that there can be time before and after to greet friends, and the children might get fussy if there's a long one in the block meetings. And in the ward that I'm going to tell you about today, my visionary ward, we would take a vote as to whether we would have the block system or if we would have the separate sacrament meeting. The actual sacrament meeting, as I enter the chapel, I am met by prelude music that is performed by a friend or friends playing one or more instruments. And or they may even be singing if that's what they desire. It could be a hymn, or it could be a piece by Mozart or Beethoven or by William Kaw. The chapel is bathed in suffused golden light filtered through beautifully wrought stained glass windows. The large one in front depicts the Savior teaching from the Mount. Other smaller windows on both walls all have different biblical themes. And it all adds to the wonderful spiritual montage that we would feel going into this chapel. When the music ends, we are welcomed by Bishop Susan Williams. She is the only person on the stand, as her counselors are taking their turns sitting with their families. Next, and then the next Sunday, the bishop will then sit with her family, and a counselor will conduct. The only other people in front are the chorister and her husband, and the pianist and his wife. Their children happen to be grown. I'm not going to get into what they're going to do if they have children. I guess they could take turns sitting with them or something. I don't know. There are no visiting state presidents or high counselors. It is simply the person that is conducting up there in front. The bishop's voice matches the spirit prevailing in the chapel. She assumes that we can read our program. So she doesn't read to us from what will happen and when. She assumes that we can discern who will speak, who will pray, and when these things will occur. Of course, some announcements will have to be made, and she can do that, and she'll do it succinctly. So instead of reading what we can read, she gives a short, well-thought-out message pertaining to the life and teachings of the Savior. She then leaves the stand to sit with her family, confident that those people on the program will execute their responsibilities responsibly. We then proceed with the opening song, followed possibly by a child giving the opening prayer. Someone will come forward to give a short scripture reading, followed by the sacrament song. While the congregation sings the song, the priests, Sherry, Sam, and Leah, prepare the sacrament of whole wheat bread, grape juice, maybe it's possibly a light wine. The deacons, of course, including the young men and young women, then pass the sacrament to the congregation. But you say, since the bishop is not in front, how do they know when to give the first person, you know, let them take the sacrament? As you know, at least in my ward, and I'm sure it's in every other ward, the young men watch the front of the chapel to wait to see when the bishop or the presiding authority takes the first piece of bread and takes the first sip of water. Well, in the scriptures, I always understood that the leaders would be last, or at least, or maybe even they would serve the sacrament. So I think it would be much more appropriate that even if the young deacons don't pass the sacrament, that we would have the bishops or the high counselors or whoever happens to be in authority. So we don't worry. She says the bishop is not at all worried about whether or not she takes it first. In fact, she prefers to take it last. We then hear from two or three speakers who choose their own topics, whatever they prefer, or they may perform a musical number instead. We don't have to worry about a message from the High Councilman, as he only comes every once, 2 or 3 years, if he's invited. The speakers are unafraid to broach controversial topics, testimonies, or reveal uncertainties or fears without the fear of being put down for expressing such feelings. After the talks, we have a closing prayer. We end our sacrament meeting with hymns. There's a spontaneous holding on to each other as we stand and sing for as long as we want. Afterward, with the music still ringing in our ears, we don't want to leave, so we don't. The children find their friends to play with, adults seek friends, and find a place to sit and talk. In my ward, we usually bring picnic dinners and sit on the lawn if it's a nice day. In keeping the Sabbath day holy, we use it to nurture our relationships with our families and with our friends. Our ward truly then becomes an extended family. Thank you.
It's interesting that Marty and I had such a similar beginning. I, too, thought that the presiding bishop should be Sister Linda Kimball. I would love her to be my bishop. But that her counselor, Brother Smith, should conduct. One thing that I would add to her description of the perfect sacrament, however, was that the congregation would be a group of well-educated liberal Democrats. So there would be a real feeling of understanding and support and love and camaraderie there. And another thing is that the music should be an original composition featuring trumpet, violin, and harp. But other than that, they were pretty close, my fantasy and Linda's fantasy, or Marty's fantasy, I mean. 2 summers ago, I studied in London, and while I was there, some of my friends came over for the Mormon History Association conference and to tour England. And I would join them on weekends. I would take a train to wherever they were, and then we would spend the weekend together. Well, one Sunday, we found ourselves in Cambridge. We went to sacrament meeting at the local Cambridge ward, and then we drove into the university and attended services at King's College Chapel. At that time, I was very struck by the two worship experiences, and I called them low church and high church, respectively. Now, sacrament meeting I referred to as low church. The ward was a typical ward. It was European standard plan A or B. It was a nice building, an adequate building, a clean building, but not an inspiring building. The ward members were generally pretty humble people. They were not trained in music or in speaking. But I remember being touched by the service and by the dedication of those people, by their sacrifices, because they really had to sacrifice quite a bit to be Mormons and to do the things that Mormons do with the congregation. And I remember their humility as they expressed awareness of their limitations and their earnest desire to serve the Lord, to love their families, and to help their neighbors. Well, the services at King's College Chapel were what I referred to as high church. The chapel is gorgeous. It's the most beautiful chapel I know of. It's not huge, but it's large, and it has high vaulted ceilings. And it has a magnificent organ. In stone throughout the building are intricate carvings. There's a repeated carving of a unicorn, then a lion, then a unicorn, then a lion throughout the building. And it has wonderful religious paintings and beautiful stained glass windows. It had one of those magnificent male choirs with the children with the high, high voices. And the music, I remember, is being so glorious and so lovely, I could almost feel like I was seeing it rise and filling that magnificent hall. And it was a thrilling religious experience to me. The organ solos were grand, and they fitted the quality of the organ and the abilities of the performer. And I was touched in this meeting by the beauty and the power of superbly performed religious music, and by the long tradition evident in the worship services and by the chapel itself. But the congregation was entirely impersonal in that meeting, and in the worship service I learned nothing about the life or the religious experience of anyone there. Now, since that Sunday, I've asked myself, must the high church and the low church experiences be forever separate? Is it not possible to combine in the perfect sacrament meeting the honesty, humility, and intimacy of the low church experience with the beauty, power, and excellence of the high church experience? And as I've thought about it, I've come to the conclusion that such a merging is not an easy thing to bring about. The goal of the two experiences is, each goal is different. And the goals create tension that operate against their coming together. If we're after excellence, then we're looking for the best, the most talented musicians, the most trained and gifted speakers. Those who've achieved such excellence belong to a small, exclusive group from which the majority are excluded, not simply because of lack of effort, but also because of lack of talent. The emphasis on excellent necessarily creates a hierarchy, the gifted who will perform and speak, and the majority who will listen. And that configuration leads toward an impersonal worship service in which the majority are silent. On the other hand, to choose random members of the congregation for speaking and musical assignments in sacrament meeting means that the services are rarely excellent, that many times the congregation will not be fed loaves and fishes of the gospel, but instead a tepid, watered-down gruel, and that for many, the time in sacrament meeting is best spent reading the scriptures, dialogue, sunstone, and exponent 2. Notice how I put all those together as useful things to read in sacrament meeting. But to me, it seems that the participation of the many is the higher good, and consequently, perhaps there will never be a perfect sacrament meeting. And even I'm troubled even by the notion of perfect. Perfect is one of those hard, brilliant words that, like diamonds, are very attractive but all too often break people and things. But even acknowledging the impossibility of perfection, surely we can do better than we do. So rather than having the rift between the intellectuals who are disgusted with the status quo and the rest who create it, perhaps the leaders in charge, like if I could be a leader in charge, this is what I'd do. They could begin to educate whole congregations, whole wards, to expect more from and give more to sacrament meeting. And I think that this has to be done at the local level, because at the church level, we do expect excellence. We expect that the Mormon Tabernacle Choir will feature people with trained voices, and that the Mormon Youth Chorus and Symphony will have the best performers in it. But what can be done at the local level? Well, just for as an example, to participate in this symposium, applicants had to present written abstracts of their papers. Now, that indicates a certain amount of thought and preparation has gone into one's presentation if you have to present an abstract in advance of the paper. Why don't bishops or their counselors select speakers at least 2 weeks ahead and ask them for an abstract of their speeches 1 week before they are to be presented? That would require preparation and prevent so many of the poor speaking practices that plague us. The rereading of the general authority's speech mumbled from the pulpit, the travelogue, or the family introduction, for example. Now, I don't mean this to be like was the practice in one ward in which I was a member, of which I was a member, where the bishop, who I called the ultimate bureaucrat, he had control over every aspect and every facet of everything that went on in that ward. And he assigned speeches and the topics that would be spoken several weeks in advance. And then a week before, the speakers had to meet and give their topics, give their speeches to each other. And the purpose was not only for excellence, but for censorship. And I don't think that's appropriate. We shouldn't try to censor ideas, but we should promote thoughtful preparation. And to that end, I would also encourage those people who are speaking to pray and fast and study. I wouldn't have bishops assign the topics, but I would ask that they ask the people who are speaking to prayerfully consider what the ward members need to hear. What would bless this congregation? And then ask them to prepare their talks to that end. And another thing that I would ask of the speakers is humility. I think that I have learned the most and been touched the most and been pleased the most by humble expressions of faith and of the attempts to have the interaction of with the Lord in people's lives. People who are willing to talk about where they are and be humble about their limitations. For example, I think intellectual people need to be humble about their abilities and recognize their limitations, recognize that sensitivity is often more important than intellect and that they too don't have all the answers. There are just too many big questions, and that they can be touched by a religious experience in the same way that everyone else has. Everyone else can be. And in the matter of music, for my final content, I believe that we should use the talent that is there. Choir directors should be really talented musicians, not me. The worst calling I ever had in my life was to be the music director of the Relief Society, because although I can go like this with my hand and make the patterns, I can't hear when people are off key. I can't hear when I'm off key. How could I train those people to sing something in a meeting, to sing a beautiful hymn in a meeting, when I can't even hear it myself? On the other hand, I've been in wards where a really good musician can take people like me, you know, just mediocre people, and because of their own abilities and their ability to work with people, turn them into choirs who can sing things they didn't know it was possible for them to sing, who can sing things beyond their abilities. And I've also seen a choir director in Cambridge, Paul Dredge, care about the music and the musical presentations enough that for Easter he prepared selections from a Bach Mass with orchestra and chorus. And that's the kind of thing I think that we can do. I think we can educate each other and raise our services to the point where to worship is to do your best. To worship is to present the best that you have, to be as excellent as it's possible for you to be, and yet to still have the sense of humility about your own weaknesses and a willingness to accept the weaknesses of other people. Thank you.
I really believe that the first thing that should be done to improve sacrament meetings is to get Coke machines in the foyer so that if you notice what the speakers are all drinking, so that people can stay awake. I'm reminded of one of the funniest things that ever happened in the celestial room of the temple. We're waiting to have our middle son sealed to us. It was a hot, hot summer July day in Logan before they gutted the temple and created those rooms. And my brother went up to one of the little lady temple workers who, you know how they are, shh, shh, shh. He said, "It's hotter than hell in here. Do you know where the Coke machine is?" Up in northern Utah, where we live, they've just developed a pilot program to improve the attendance at sacrament meetings. And what they've done is agreed to announce the winners of the Idaho Lottery in a sacrament meeting, and the attendance is really skyrocketing. When Marty called and asked me to do this, I thought that she'd taken leave of her senses, because after a number of years as a bishop and other things worrying about sacrament meetings, I tried to think of what they were for and what you tried to accomplish. And I'm reminded that I was taught the purpose was to partake of the sacrament and be reminded of the mission of Jesus Christ. But there are a number of things that make that make it difficult. I want to talk about some of the difficulties and then some of the ideal meetings. I think it's a real problem, as has been brought out with the block meeting, because before and after, because we're a very vocal church and we talk a lot, and you've got everybody that's teaching priest meeting, relief society, and they're studying their lessons if you have sacrament meeting first. And then half of them don't get there till you're in the middle of the sacrament anyway. And then after, trying to get people in and get it started on time and get a degree of reverence in a generic chapel with aesthetic sterility, with a lot of children running back and forth and a lot of them hungry. The other thing, they just ought to face the fact and pass out little bags of Cheerios when people come in. Especially when they've been there 3 hours straight and the priests that have gone to 7-Eleven or Winchell's don't bring things back to share. I think one thing that is sorely missed is, again, it's a personal opinion, but I think when you had the sacrament in junior Sunday school, the reverence among the children was genuine, and they saw the importance of it and participated in it at a different level. It was also a good place. I remember having a priest who couldn't read and stuttered badly. And it was a place where he could go and practice and no one would make fun and he wouldn't panic. And it's a good place to teach young people what the sacrament is about. And I think we miss that, as well as the opportunity for 2.5-minute talks and certain musical things. But that's just a personal feeling. You know, the church is democratic, and we like to hear from a variety of people, and not everyone's a trained speaker. And so, although it's nice to have people who can really bring us a message, that is not necessarily the reality, and I'm not sure that's all bad. I think it's nice to hear from a variety of people, and, you know, you take a gamble. You gamble with the high council, who are usually chosen because of their capacity to run errands, not because of their capacity to speak. And I remember one time adding up Sundays, you know, worried about programs, and you start thinking, well, there are 12 fast Sundays, who used to be fast. You know, when you were a kid, they were fast because you went to sacrament meeting after Sunday school and you were through with it. And so that made a fast Sunday because you could go play around the rest of the day. Now it doesn't make sense to kids to call it a fast Sunday. But anyway, if you add the 12 fast Sundays to the 4 conferences, 2 stake and 2 general, and then add in the 12 high counselors, figure you're going to have 10 to 12 missionary farewells or welcome home, it really leaves the bishopric with about 10 to 12 a year. If you start thinking of whether or not you can really control and have a good quality sacrament meeting, even though you're supposed to keep track of families and farewells, that's a joke. But now that leads me to what you should do with the 10 or 12 if you have the opportunity. There are 3 examples. One time, I remember when Easter Sunday was on a conference Sunday in April, and for some reason, none of the general authorities remembered that fact in their talks. And I know it was a total void the whole day, and so we decided to have a special meeting the next Sunday, and we decided to juggle the schedule. And they've talked about juggling the schedule, and I don't think there's anything wrong, although I did get parts of my anatomy chewed over this, which I didn't know existed. But we decided to have music, then the speaker, then music, then the sacrament music, and the sacrament last, and have all the music and the speaker directed toward the life and mission of Jesus, and then have the sacrament last so that people would really have a sense of that's why we came and that's what it was about. And we thought it went well. But anyway... That was a good sacrament meeting because everything was focused and directed, the music, the speaker, toward a specific topic which related to the atonement of Christ and made the sacrament really, really meaningful because it was the last thing that people did. And the priests and the deacons probably did the best job they'd ever done, and then we all went to Winchell's. But anyway, the second one was, again, this one was about 20 years ago, and I've told this story a lot, but it's one of the most meaningful sacrament meetings I've ever been in, because we were living in Texas at the time, during a time of considerable unrest over civil rights, and a lot of the people that were in the congregation carried with them cultural baggage that included a lot of prejudice. And so we decided to have a sacrament meeting focus on the Savior and focus around the story of the Good Samaritan and other examples from the Savior, and then have as a musical number one of my students who was black. And he came late. My wife went to get him because he was singing at another church. And, you know, everybody was just sitting there in the afternoon cruising along. And we announced that Curtis McLean would now sing the Battle Hymn of the Republic. And he came forward, all 6'4" in a steel gray suit with a black shirt and a white tie, and sang. And as we've said, the bishop was a doctor, and he could have performed tonsillectomies on two-thirds of the congregation, and they'd have never known what hit him. It was a very, very moving experience. But we got chewed out for that because the Battle Hymn of the Republic isn't in the hymn book. And then the other, which is very, very memorable to me, although it's a tough thing to do, but we saw it often in New Zealand. And again, sometimes you're best if you act like the rules don't exist. But one of the things that I liked best about New Zealand is that you never knew what was going to happen in church. It was absolutely exciting because, you know, the organist may not show. So you live without a prelude. The stake president come, and his big concern was whether or not the Maoris had shoes on, you know, things like that. But very often, they would not have a sacrament meeting planned. It's just one of those things you forget to do, to get a speaker or a musical number. And those were the best sacrament meetings I've ever been to. And I'll tell the personal aspect of it, although it happened many times. But right before we came home, Kay's folks came to visit us and to come home with us. And that was one of the Sundays. I mean, it was the Sunday after Christmas. Who's thinking about getting a sacrament speaker the Sunday after Christmas? Besides that, in New Zealand, it's in the summer. So it was one of the, and what they do is this. You know, they'd have the sacrament, and you'd look up there, and a couple guys in the bishopric, maybe one, depending on who came that week. But they, you know, there was usually at least one, and they'd you'd see no one else up there. And they'd he'd get up after the sacrament and say, "I'd like to have Brother Alexander come up here and sing. What would you like to sing?" Sister Peterson, do you know that song? Will you please accompany him? And Tom would sing. Now you got to the Maori people can sing. They're not like me, but they knew who could sing and who had. It didn't matter whether they were in the songbook or not. They'd get up and sing, and it was beautiful. And then they'd say, "We'd like to hear a few words from Sister Bates. Would you please come up and speak?" And then she'd come up and speak, and right out of the clear. They called on my wife's folks. Now, Kay's dad had never spoken in church in 50-some years in the United States. And he gave a beautiful talk because he had felt, in the couple weeks he'd been in New Zealand, amazing love among the Maori people. And like he said, he told them that they'd been able to do something his bishop had never been able to do, and that was to get him to speak in church. And although he was a stranger, he felt somewhat at home because he kissed all the women there. And that was true, because that's how you're greeted as a stranger. And again, I think as far as a sacrament meeting goes, those are some of the most memorable and spiritual. I think when you have a church that depends on a lay clergy and it's family-oriented and things with a block schedule and a sterile chapel, and we can, we have ideals. But I think if we really, really work to have quality music every time, I think there's something about music that sets a stage, that, and we don't take advantage of the talent that exists often in our own ward community. I think if we have to involve the youth, no matter how good or bad they are, but the future of the organization depends on them, and we have to use them. And then I think constantly be reminded of why we're there, to partake of the sacrament, and that the worship service involved should point to that. And then I think it's important to vary the structure and keep people on their toes and awake. And if they won't let you have a Coke machine in the foyer, then you better call on them a couple times without notice. I don't think there's any such animal as a perfect sacrament meeting, but for me it's fun to go and feel and see and be reacquainted with our ward family. Thank you.
I said yes when Marty called me early one morning and got thinking after, why did I say yes? I guess I've been a Mormon all my life and I just say yes when people ask me to do something. Though it's been valuable for me because I serve in a bishopric now, and this has been helpful to think about what a perfect sacrament meeting would be like. When I started to prepare for this panel, I asked friends what their perfect sacrament meeting would be. I got a lot of answers, but many of them I didn't agree with. Some said that sacrament meetings should be shorter. I disagree. I think we should lengthen them. Some said that a perfect sacrament meeting would be without children. I don't agree. I think children and babies are an important part of the experience. Some said without toys, without Cheerios, without high council speakers. And I disagree with all those. So I decided to express my own view and not other people's view. Before I tell you my view of a perfect sacrament meeting, I need to tell you about my view of what a ward should be. And I feel like that is kind of the key to having a perfect sacrament meeting. I think the ward should be a community in the best sense of the word. In my community, there's not all Democrats or liberals. I enjoy being one of the few in our ward. But I feel the community should have all types of people and should be include a wide range of experience and education. And I find that's not true in a lot of wards, but in the ward that I go to here in Salt Lake and the Avenues, that is true. So I think the ward should be a community in the best sense of the word, a community that gives support and love to each member. It should be able to give physical support. The welfare program, fast offerings do that. And that's exactly what the bishops and the early wards did, is they took care of the poor in Nauvoo and in early Salt Lake. But I think more importantly, in this day and age, the ward should be able to give emotional support to its members. I love the scripture in Mosiah where Alma is talking to the people, saying, telling them what they should be like after they've joined the church. And one of the things they should be like is that they should be willing to bear one another's burdens. And I really like that image. And I think in this day and age, that's being able to give emotional support to the people in our community or our ward. This support should be available to all members of the ward or the community that need it and that want it. I also am a big advocate of leaving people alone if they don't want to participate. I think that's another thing that you can do, if you can offer, but if people don't want this support, we should be able to leave them alone. An ideal community would encourage discussion of personal problems, and the group would work on them together. Of course, a community is not without conflicts, but the resolution of these issues and these conflicts makes the community stronger. I think the most important thing that a community or a ward can do is provide a sense of belonging, a sense of being at home. The biggest problem in our modern society is the feeling of not belonging, of being alone, of being cut off from our supports. We were talking the other night about the difference between urban situations. You can see in elevators, in a real urban setting, if you go into an elevator, no one talks. You're not supposed to talk. If you're from the country, you don't know that, so you start talking to the people in the elevator. Well, I think this is the idea that's happened in our urban settings, that we isolate ourselves. This, of course, has been caused by the breakdown of traditional communities, integration of special groups, and the mobilization of society, as well as the breakdown of the family. I just wanted to ask Marty what would happen if the choir director did have a husband or a spouse. This is happens a lot in some of the wards. Okay, let's see, where am I? Breakdown of the family. People usually don't have extended families to give them support. Many children are being raised without both parents or without any parents. Homelessness is becoming very visible. Many of the traditional supports are gone. Urbanization has taken its toll, and being naive like I am, think that the ward should take the place of these lost supports. Now, I don't think it's our intention to talk reality in this session, since the word perfect is in the title of the session. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that I really believe that the ward should take the place of these traditional supports that we have lost. Okay, so the sacrament meeting should be a place where members of that community come together to celebrate the support and the love they have for each other. This is the time where the community meets together as a community. It should be a time and a place when we act jointly to confirm our bond. And I guess the bond is of that community is the love that we have for each other and the love we have for Christ. We are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints in the household of God. We start and should start this joint celebration by singing together. Congregational singing is very important to this feeling. You are making a common effort, and you are giving a feeling that you're working together. In our ward, we often feel if we don't have a special musical number, and we just have a congregational hymn, we've failed. And I think that's not true. I think the times when we have the congregational hymns is the times that we are bringing this group together. Another important community confirming part of sacrament meeting is the ritual of the sacrament. Sometimes as Mormons, we look down upon ritual and see it as evil. And I think we got this attitude from our Puritan ancestors who wanted to purify Christianity, and the way they did that is to reject ritual. Ritual can be very important in defining the community and in supporting it. No time is the United States more unified than on the 4th of July when we're going through the ritual of celebrating the founding of our country. So I'm saying that we need this ritual in the church to unify us as a group and to confirm that we are a community. Ritual can confirm shared values and reinforce the ideas of the community. When the sacrament is passed to the congregation, we are remembering the sacrifice of Christ, and we are including the whole community in this special time. All levels of position, all ages, become members of that community when they partake of that ritual. Okay, I think also that the ward not only provides physical and emotional support, which I've been talking about, but also spiritual support. Sacrament meetings should be a time when we can share our spiritual experiences and our spiritual strength. I think that talks should be personal, and that's very hard for me to do. But I think we should try. We should be able to talk in a personal way about our spiritual travels. I'm used to thinking that gospel education comes another way. We study the principles of the gospel in Sunday school classes, in Relief Society, and quorum meetings. There we can discuss and debate. As a result, I don't expect preaching in sacrament meeting. Sometimes we can learn gospel things, but it is the spirit that we feel that is more important than what we learn, the principles we learn. My ideal sacrament meeting also is not attached to 2 hours of other meetings, but sits alone on Sunday afternoon. I know I'm beginning to sound like an old fogey who remembers better days when that happened, but also my ideal sacrament meeting, there'd be no other wards waiting to come into the chapel, no church leaders reminding you to be quiet. There'd be plenty of time to talk before and after the services. And I think then there would be plenty of time to share your burdens, and there'd be plenty of time to enjoy each member of the community. So that's my vision of a perfect sacrament meeting.
We have really a lot of time, I think more than we're going to need, for questions or comments, if anyone has anything. Yes?
I'm interested in music, and I have in the past led choirs and so forth. I was very much pleased to have the priesthood given to every worthy male, including the blacks. So I always ask the question, and I was never answered properly, why can't we incorporate some of the spiritual music that the blacks have into our... Have you ever seen a community of blacks when they get together in their spiritual meetings? True, they probably get out of hand for our purposes, but certainly...
Oh, would we get out of hand? I think it would be wonderful.
Certainly we could at least, you know, take some of the beautiful music that they have and incorporate them, but they won't let us do that.
No, you probably should have come up and said that in the microphone.
Well, why don't you repeat it?
No. I think it's a really good idea. He talked about having to, since we've had the blacks now in full fellowship with having been given the priesthood, why don't we also take into in their music, their kind of music, their spirituals. And I think we all agree. Does anyone else have a comment or a question? Yes?
Well, I actually have two. One is, when Ross was talking about his experiences in New Zealand, it reminded me of my experience in New Mexico, which...
As I was saying, when I heard Ross, it reminded me of my experiences in Mexico, which, until this very moment, I didn't see as a strength. I saw as a weakness because it wasn't like Mormondom at home. However, now that I reflect on that, it seems to me that maybe you're right. Maybe that... around in the congregation while someone else was speaking to find the next speaker. And more often than not only did we not have anyone to play the piano or lead the singing, we didn't have a piano. So it was that I appreciate the fact that he brought that up. Another thing I must tell you is that I was at the Perfect Sacrament meeting last Sunday, and too bad that y'all weren't there. We have some people in our ward who are involved in the symphony, and we had a boy solo, a boy soprano, and a female soprano, and two violinists sing a piece that was performed at one of the symphonies this past season, and actually two pieces, and it was the most spiritual sacrament meeting I've been to in probably 10 years. And I really appreciated that experience.
Yes.
I come from diaspora, meaning outside the state of Utah. So our rumors are probably less reliable than yours. Is there really some program that you're thinking about changing the block program? Or is that just...
I hear rumors. I even heard a rumor the other day. Do you want me to tell you what it was? That they're going to... Yes, very faith-promoting. That they're going to let people only wear garments in the temple instead of out on the street. I think that's very faith-promoting. And I'm going to digress, and we're going to tell sacrament meeting stories, things that actually happen in sacrament meetings. Do you want to tell a funny one? Do you have a funny one? I have one. Oh, you have one? You have to come forward. What time is it? And you guys can leave anytime you want, but wait till her story.
I spent 21 years living in Hawaii, and it wasn't quite as casual as New Zealand. And I was the organist, so I knew the organist always showed up. But there was a certain freedom about the meetings that I don't usually see here. I recall one time in testimony meeting, one of the old Hawaiian brothers got up, and he said he thought that the men should sing to the women. And he called all the men to come forward, stand across the front of the chapel, and sing a hymn to the women. I think they sang "Ye Elders of Israel." But another thing that happened in this ward that was really much more touching is that we had an elderly Hawaiian couple. It was a second marriage for both. I think they had something like 20 children between them. And she was actually a recent convert to the church. Now, you're supposing that because she was Hawaiian, she was full of aloha. But people who had known her before she joined the church always remarked at what a transformation had occurred in her life. She and her husband would get up early every Sunday morning and pick crown flowers. They had huge crown flower bushes, and those crown flowers, they'll take over your yard. But they would pick all the crown flowers and make dozens of leis, and then just come to church and pass them out. Well, my father came to visit me, as he sometimes did, and my father comes from, I guess you would call it, a poor Scandinavian family from Box Elder County. And although he's a high priest, he speaks of the Mormons as them. And he'll say, gee, these Mormons are building a lot of chapels around here. He's worked on the railroad, so he's had very irregular church attendance. He used to go to priesthood meeting when he was in town. And then he'd come home and fix Sunday dinner. And that would be the extent of his church attendance. Of course, he was kind of the priesthood lesson rabble-rouser, and asking difficult questions. But anyway, there's the sense in which he never completely identified with his Mormon heritage. He came to visit my ward, and this dear sister came up, put a lei over his neck, and gave him a kiss on the cheek. And he sat there with tears in his eyes, and he says, no one in my home ward ever gave me anything. And so that was one rather nice thing about sacrament meeting. Here would be all these people wearing flowers, and many of the flowers would come from this couple.
Thank you all for coming. Oh, you have another story? We can go on until 6 o'clock if people have stories, but I think... Yeah, you can ask questions. We have more questions.
I just wanted to tell an experience we had a few weeks ago at the sacrament meeting, if I may borrow your indulgence. I'm the stake young women's president in our stake, and we have a youth conference every year, but traditionally we're not allowed to go over a Sunday. This year we talked our stake presidency into allowing us to take the youth up to a mountain setting. It happened to be a girls' camp where they had dormitory-like situation where we didn't actually camp in tents, but it was an outdoor situation. And we went over a Sunday. And so my thought was, a lot of these kids have never really experienced a spiritual sacrament meeting. At least their spirit is not in tune oftentimes, you know, if you watch a lot of youth. And one of the things we debated was what the girls should have to wear, you know, what the kids should have to wear to sacrament meeting. And some of them thought they had to wear dresses. And I was of the opinion they needed to learn that you didn't have to be dressed up to have a spirit, you know, feel the spirit. And so we decided they could wear anything they wanted, but to try to be clean and appropriate, you know, in that manner. And so we had it outdoors in an outdoor amphitheater. And the young men who did the sacrament chose to wear a white shirt, and it set them apart a little bit as a way of showing maybe reverence toward the sacrament that they were serving. They served the sacrament. It was absolutely quiet. And a hush came over the kids, and just a real great spirit kind of took over that meeting. And then a few of the girls sang a song that they had worked quite hard to prepare, sang it with a real good spirit. You could tell that they were quite touched as they sang it. And then we had a speaker that walked kind of right into the group. He was a Hawaiian man, and he loved youth, and he walked right up near them and actually walked up in the aisles at several times as he talked to them and asked them to participate at various points in the sacrament meeting. And I think those kids had a very spiritual experience in that sacrament meeting. After the sacrament meeting, they were taken out. They all went into the woods alone with their scriptures and journals and spent 2 hours by themselves in contemplation or prayer or scripture reading. And while some of the men were preparing dinner, some of our men leaders prepared the dinner for them. After what I didn't mention, we went into it fasting also. And so I think it is possible, you know, if you kind of go off the beaten track. I mean, maybe that was an unusual circumstance. But when we did have our testimony meeting later that evening, some really significant things were said by the youth. And so I felt like that maybe was an experience I'd had with a successful sacrament meeting.
Are there any more questions? Yes.
How do you get out of the rut and a ward that I'm in where all of the sacrament meeting topics are assigned as simply because of censorship, I think, and they do not allow any speakers from outside to come in?
Change wards. I don't know.
I mean, what do you do?
I don't know.
Become the bishop.
Yeah. Run for bishop. Yeah.
I think ultimately those things, you know, it depends on your local leaders and how they interpret how to get along best with the stake leaders. And, it, you know, it's very, very difficult on how, you know, they're trying maybe to control a situation so they can, you know, get the messages out that they think the ward might need. But you're really at the mercy of a bishopric. And, you know, as I mentioned, they don't control that many meetings when you start doing the math. But on the ones they control, then that's their prerogative.
Yes.
In response to that question, I ran into the same situation a couple of years ago in my own ward, not so much as assigning topics, but to never get them to bring in outside speakers. And I went to the bishop, and he said it was not allowed in our ward, that the state didn't do that, and I said, baloney. I then handed him a list of the speakers that were on the circuit, per se, and said, hey, every other ward is doing that. But even that didn't convince me. What I finally ended up doing is I started putting in words in different people's ears, and they kept hearing it from all these different sources. Oh, yes, that would be a good idea. And all of a sudden it went to the counselor's wife and the bishopric, and she says, oh, I'll go home and tell my husband. So then he kept hearing it from all these different sources. I don't think he ever did put together that I was the source. But it has worked, and it's actually gotten a lot better.
Yes.
Well, one of the things I learned, virtually all of you said that you didn't like high council speakers. My observation has been that they're very little worse or very little better than anybody else who talks. I wondered why you feel that way about it.
Well, go ahead. Yeah.
You know, there. We should have Bert Wilson here. He could write a book on high council folklore. I think part of it has to do with they don't have a chance before they start. with the people often through time, because everybody has them imaged as the dry council, and often because they're assigned topics that may or may not be of interest to the people, but certainly in the eyes of the stake president are very, very important. I think at times a stake president tries to get people who have a reputation as being good speakers, but for the most part, you know, has to work with the bishops on who's available. But I think it's really an image that they don't have a chance. And one of the things that separates them often from the other speakers that come, I think, is that people are often more sympathetic to those that are called from their own ward and will listen to them, where the high councilman may not have a chance going in. I mean, he has to really do something exciting right off to grab them. And often, you know, people have left before then. It may be, you know, not justified.
Convention center or something. It's no more religious than this. No, exactly. There's nothing.
Don't you have orange carpet?
Yes, we live in a ward that's an old building that's beautiful, has a hill from our place on it, and staying across the building. And this week I came to church and they are with me, a foyer that has a beautiful tile fireplace.
I know you probably all want to go. I hope this isn't going to be recorded.
I don't know.
Oh, well, anyway. I will preface my remarks just by saying that I've never been known as the most humble person, so you'll forgive me when you may perceive this as being boastful, because I am. My husband is not a member of the church, and we've been married for 37, 38 years, so there have been a lot of struggles, but most of my children are practicing Mormons. So one of our very innovative high counselors, who I think kind of likes our family, my children are all grown now, out of the house, invited my husband and I to speak at a sacrament meeting in July. It was a couple of years ago. And the theme, we always have a theme each month, the theme was on freedom. And I've always loved the elderly and felt that they sometimes don't really get a very good break in our sacrament meetings. First of all, nobody speaks loud enough to hear them in Relief Society or a sacrament meeting, and I'm always the one on the back row saying, would you speak up, because I'm fast approaching that state. And so I wanted to honor them to some degree. And so I said I wanted to honor the pioneers, who I think epitomized people who were searching for freedom. And so I had everyone stand up and then had them sit down in succession of how many years they had been in the area. I really wanted to honor, we have a lot of new people moving into our ward. We hardly know anybody anymore. I wanted the new people to see who the pioneers of our area were. And, of course, the very few who remained standing who'd been there for over 50, 60 years. I felt it was important to honor them. So we did that. Then because it was July and it was close to the 4th, I mean, we were not only talking about pioneers, we were also talking about the 4th of July. And I always loved one of our choristers who used to always, I mean, hardly one month went by that we didn't have some patriotic song. And it was always a rousing song. And she always directed the music fast enough for me. So I wanted to honor all those who had served in the armed forces. And I had all the men and women stand. I've been a Relief Society teacher for years, and I've loved, you know, a little class participation. So I had all of the people who had served in the armed forces stand. And I get chills as I think about it, but it was beautiful to me to see some of those gentlemen who later told me no one had ever honored them that way, with the tears streaming down their face. My husband also participated. This high counselor, counselor in the bishopric said, we also want your husband to speak. Well, he's always supported our ward financially. In fact, he's been there. He always came to hear one of us sing or do something. But he liked to fly airplanes. His church was the airport on Sunday. So one Sunday, in fact, he was there to hear one of us sing, and the bishop said, now we want all of you Melchizedek priesthood holders to remain, they needed to raise some money for the organ, as I later heard. And he said, oh, and that includes you, Ernie. So they made him feel a part. And even though he's not a member of the church, and I don't know that he ever will be, that was a great fellowshipping for him. And he has always felt a part of our community because of people like this counselor and our bishopric.
One comment. The thing that's always disturbed me about the block system is the failure of anybody in church hierarchy to pay any attention to human nature as it applies to an attention span. And, you know, anybody who's heard or seen any, read any statistics about our human abilities to pay attention, I don't know anybody who says that a three-hour span is anything but superhuman in, as far as attention span goes. I have three children that are now in their teens, and I've struggled through the block system for years with them, just wiggling and squirming, not paying any attention to what's being said, not getting anything out of the meeting other than dirty looks from their father. And wonder, you know, my solution to a better sacrament meeting would be to do away with the Sunday school. I think it's superfluous, and I think most people in the church believe it's superfluous. And if we have our quorum meetings, primary, and take care of everybody else, knock it down to a two-hour block, I think we'll all be a lot better off.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.